morning. Several of you have asked about taking the practice back to the real world, so to speak, when the retreat is over, carrying out the practice. Quite a legitimate concern in some ways. I will say something at the end as well, but you have already answered your own question this morning by, after getting a good sound sleep, getting up and without a second thought returning to your cushion. Perhaps the only difference is when we return to the workaday world, we don't have the cushion. Don't misunderstand me, I'm not suggesting you don't need to sit when you return. By all means, do. But do it in a way that is in accord with your daily life and with those around you. It should not be a disruption. As you have thrown yourself into the practice here, throw yourself into the world, the busyness, the problems, the confusion. If you do it with the sincerity that you have practiced here, you'll have no problems? No. Certainly, I hope you will have problems. But in a profound sense, the practice will continue seamlessly. It will not be the same practice. In some ways, it will be more difficult. In some ways, it will be a lot easier. You'll probably be getting more sleep anyway. But you will have to see through this amidst the buzzing confusion, interactions with others, demands being made, unexpected things. That becomes the real dojo, as it's called. Dojo is a Japanese term which originally means simply the place of practice, the literal sense of Gautama Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. That was his dojo. The whole universe must be our dojo, our place of practice. As important as these sitting cushions are. I won't belabor the point because you will have ample time and place to discover this for yourself soon enough. Throw yourself into the world as you have thrown yourself into the practice here. into the problems and the confusion. And your practice will mature. And you will find yourself bowing in deep thanks to the challenges that you meet. Let me return to finish up Poshan, section 9. He calls it the disease of, I titled it, this disease of self-indulgence, or perhaps a as-you-please Zen, to quote Poshan. If you are unable to arouse the doubt when practicing Zen, you may fall into self-indulgent and wild ways. Meeting others, you sing, dance, and carry on. By the river and under trees, you recite poetry, prattle, and laugh. Sauntering around busy places, you convince yourself that you've resolved the great matter of life and death. When you see a worthy teacher open a meditation hall, establish rules for the Sangha community, do Zazen, chant the name of the Buddha, and other virtuous acts, you let out a scornful laugh and curse them. Since you are unable to truly practice, you disturb others who are. Not knowing how to truly recite the sutras, worship, or confess your faults, you hinder others who can. Unable to truly inquire, you interrupt those who do. You can't open your own meditation hall, so you interfere with those who have. Unable to give a real Dharma talk, you interrupt those who do. Seeing a worthy teacher present a Dharma talk in front of a congregation, you think up complicated questions and indulge in silly exchanges, give a Zen shout or a slap. The worthy teacher recognizes such things as no more than ghostly spirits acting out. If he does not indulge you, however, you spread groundless rumors, like he doesn't understand the Dharma principle. What a pity. This is your wavering mind obsessed. If you continue this way, you will fall into demonic paths and commit serious offenses. Once your good karma is exhausted, you'll fall into hell for sure. Even good intentions have bad results. Alas! One more stern warning from our friend Poshan. Is any comment needed? The tenth and final section I call the disease of do-it-yourself Zen, or perhaps putting on airs. I think you can see these last 7, 8, 9, 10, the last four sections are quite interrelated. He's not giving a systematic treatise, in a sense he's sometimes returning to the same point from a slightly different angle. Once again, these are admonishments in Japanese, keigo, literally, warning words, admonishing words, meant in a very practical sense. The tenth and final section. If you're unable to arouse the doubt when practicing Zen, you may feel annoyed by the restrictions of the Sangha, the community. You may want to go deep in the mountains where there's no one around and quietly do zazen. For a while, you may be satisfied there, closing your eyes, unifying your mind with legs crossed in full lotus, hands in grateful prayer, gassho. After a few months or years, however, you find that you cannot come fully to rest. Others, after sitting only a few days, turn to reading books and composing poetry. Self-indulgent, they shut the door and doze off. From a distance, they seem dignified, but up close, their decadence knows no bounds. Like juvenile delinquents greedily sneaking around, they neither know shame nor fear karmic retribution. Putting on airs and speaking as if they knew, they deceive the unwitting. I practiced under a great teacher. I know how to teach others, and so on. They herd the unwitting into their flock, then keep company with them, or even make them their disciples. Others then imitate this. Unaware of their errors, they do not even know to reflect on themselves or feel regret, to seek out a worthy teacher or Dharma friend. Reckless and arrogant, they spread terrible lies. They are really pitiful. Recently, some have grown weary of it and now seek out their own living quarters. It sends shivers up your spine. He concludes, if you are to genuinely seek the way, I trust you will drop such notions. Then you can inquire together with others in the Sangha and work together to keep an eye on things. Even if you cannot realize the way, at least you will not fall into such corrupt paths. Practicing the way, you must discipline yourself. Perhaps a bit of clarification. He mentions recently some have grown weary of it and now seek out their own living quarters. It sends shivers up your spine. Monks living in the closed quarters of a monastery live a communal life. They do not have, in a sense, any private space. The details are not clear because he doesn't go into it, but apparently monks were coming to him. Perhaps they were disgusted with the corruption. We don't know the details. But they were asking permission to live in their own living quarters rather than with the community of monks. And in terms of the monastic lifestyle, this could be a serious problem because of, as I've often said, supporting and being supported by each other in a community, the great value of this, huh? Again, we don't know the details of why he says this, but he gives it as a warning, huh? Most of us here are lay people, so we naturally, in a sense, have our own community that we live with, but we also have some, relatively speaking, private space. What do we do with that private space that we have? And he concludes, huh? Practicing the way, you must discipline yourself. That's how he ends it. Discipline, he actually uses the same word, admonish. You must admonish yourself. It's the same word as in the title. For what Poshan's warnings are worth, I trust you will maintain the spirit from which he speaks them. In a word, this tenth and final, in a sense, a kind of a summation, you might say, putting on airs or do-it-yourself Zen. Costume Zen, perhaps. Instead of facing honestly and directly the impasse, the blockages that arise, the temptation to seek escape into other avenues, whether it be singing and dancing or even perhaps sitting in zazen. To actually work through this. Once again, that involves from out of nowhere, all of a sudden, the sun rising and all being perfectly illuminated. It also involves a long, slow, gradual process of all the ice and snow melting. These are not the same thing. They are certainly related, but they should not be confused. When the baby is born at one moment, it's a marvelous, joyous, What a moment. And yet, then that infant must learn to walk, talk, so that it can be of service to others. That indeed takes time and a kind of discipline. We have all carried on the practice almost a whole week. Sometimes very difficult and trying, sore and painful, tired, confused. And yet, I trust you have confirmed for yourself without a doubt in your very bones. And then those bones have been ground to dust. Hell, a hungry squirrel wouldn't give them a second look. Thus we can truly serve all beings. You've had a good, I hope, sleep last night, but please do take care in returning home. Your body may still carry some of the tiredness from this last week, especially if you're driving. Do take great care returning home safely. When you do, I trust you will embrace your loved ones just as you have embraced the practice here. And I trust you will embrace the difficulties and the problems and the challenges, just as you have embraced the practice here. Then you will see, no matter what, the practice continues on. Seamlessly, although sometimes fraught with difficulty and confusion. No idea what to do, and yet we throw ourselves into it. Huh? That is the practice of the moment. You know, without a doubt, for yourself, from this last week, the great value of a retreat, that it is invaluable, isn't it? Huh? The only way to know this is to do what we have done. I trust you have also clearly seen the limit of a retreat. It is an artificial, in a sense, scheduled, set up affair within a certain time and place. All of us naturally have had to make various plans and so on in order for us to be here. It has great value, you know that. It also has a limit, know that. And be grateful for both. If our practice is real when we return to the world, rather than it being in some way a disruption, on the contrary, you will find it's just what is needed. Just what is needed. Whether it means having to sit and wait for a couple of hours in the dentist's office or finding a very ecstatic email from a friend. Don't become trapped by your newfound freedom. Soon enough, a new kind of practice will begin as we return to our lives and our world. Does anyone have a question or a concern? Please feel free to raise it. Marvelous. Someone has written on a card and asked about, what did they say, non-pop Zen reading material. A relevant question. I trust that person will come for lunch later and we can, I can give you a couple of references. I'd rather not do that during retreat. Someone else also wrote down, the following suggested discussion lecture topic: structure and discipline in the Zendo and how it is imposed. Japanese tradition and application to Zen in the West. Again, something perhaps we can take up at lunch. There are people here much more qualified to respond to that than I am. Again, a worthwhile discussion topic, but not now. If there are no more questions or discussions here for this retreat, we continue sitting again at 7 o'clock, is it? So we have about a 10-minute break. As always, thank you for listening so intently.